and they will come again. I'm going to whistle for them. They're coming back out of that dispersion. Verse 10, he goes and says it further. I will bring them again out of the land of Egypt and gather them out of Syria. I will bring them from the into the land of Gilead and Lebanon. And place shall not be found for them. What that means is there won't be enough room for all of them to be standing. You're going to be everywhere. There's going to be a whole bunch of them. There'll be no room for them. It'll be so many people. Verse 11 says, and he shall pass through the sea with affliction and shall smite the waves in the sea. He's talking about bringing them back. He's bringing the people back. He's bringing the people back. He's bringing the people back. It's cool. Because they're all but gone. Somebody back in the dark ages, I can't remember who it was, but somebody was arguing with a king about the existence of God and how can we prove there's a God. And one fellow in his court stood up and said, I have an answer to that. The Jews. They're here. And there's no reason in the world why they should still be here. And guess what? They're here. They're a burden to everybody in the world. And there's no reason in the world why they should still be here. But they are. They are. Verse 12 says, and I will strengthen them in the Lord, and they shall walk up and down in His name, saith the Lord. He says they're going to walk up and down. That's sort of like a power position, you know. Where did the devil go? Walking to and fro on the earth. Where do the angels go? Walking to and fro. We saw that in the chariots earlier in the book of Zechariah. So what we have him, he said, I'm going to let them be walking tall. They're going to be standing tall. They're going to be walking tall. And in chapter 11, this is where he starts dimming the lights. And he says, this is what you need to do, part of this burden. Remember your prisoners of promise. Remember I'm going to cast you into the dispersion here. But he says, now what I want you to do, he says, open your doors, O Lebanon, that the fire may devour that cedars. This is talking about the temple. You see that the temple was built with wood brought from Lebanon and cedars brought from Lebanon. He says, open up your doors, O Lebanon, because they'd basically embraced their values. And open up your doors, that the fire may devour thy cedars. Howl, fir tree, for the cedar is fallen, because the mighty are spoiled. Howl, O ye oak of Bashan, for the forest of the vintage is come down. And he's basically saying, the temple's going to be spoiled. The mighty are spoiled. They were spoiled under Babylon. They never really got their feet under them. Even in the days of Jesus, when Herod's temple was there, as magnificent as it may have seemed, it was just not quite the same, you know. But it was going to be burned with fire. And it was, wasn't it? Wasn't it? 70 AD, right? Constantine whooping up on the world. I mean, Rome or whatever and all that coming down. They come down, they pried every brick, one off of another, and burn it with fire. And the gold, the reason they pried those bricks apart when Jesus said, not one stone shall be laid upon another. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you know, I'd have gathered you, but, you know, it's all going to be messed up. Why? Because they burn it with fire. And what happened? When they burn it with fire, the gold melted and went in between the bricks. They broke open the bricks, one upon another, broke them literally, to get the gold. So we have God saying, open up your doors, you Lebanon. Open up the doors. Burn, burn, burn. I'm going to destroy it. It's going to be spoiled. And he says in verse 3, he says, there is a voice of howling of the shepherds for their glory is spoiled. The two words spoiled in verse 2 and verse 3. He says, a voice of roaring of lions. It's all about devouring. For the pride of Jordan is spoiled. Three times. Spoiled, spoiled, spoiled. Verse 4 is where he gives us the first of two, thus saith the Lord to the people of Israel. This one says, thus saith the Lord my God. Feed the flock of the slaughter. Feed the flock of the slaughter. The word is, they're going to be slaughtered. That's what he's saying. He's telling Zechariah now to do something he hasn't told Zechariah to do before. We've seen it with Jeremiah some, and we've seen it with Ezekiel a lot. Isaiah walked around in certain dispositions that were embarrassing or difficult, and he became a watchword. This is the place where Zechariah gets to become a gazing stock. He says to Zechariah, feed the flock of the slaughter. Now that makes sense to you if you think in terms of how they did. Feed them, feed them, feed them, get them all fat, and then we can slaughter them. Feed the flock of the slaughter. He says, whose possessions slay them, or possessors slay them. And he says, and hold themselves not guilty. This is talking about their governors. This is talking about their leaders. They would spoil them. They would take advantage of them. And they would sell them. They not only would they slay them in verse 5, but they would sell them in verse 5. And it says, and God's shepherds would not pity them. Now, what's interesting is they're called their possessors. And so God has a word against them in some sense. In verse 6, he says, for I will have no pity on the inhabitants of the land. Well, you could say, well, throw the crooks out, right? That's what we would say in America, right? Get rid of the crooks. But you know what? We got the crooks we wanted. We got the crooks we asked for. We didn't engage. We didn't keep our eyes on the prize. We let it go. We just got on our little thing and we were doing our thing. And we weren't out thinking we needed to vote or we needed to care about this stuff. And our world is where it is today because we asked for a king of this sort. As a country, that's what we've asked for. These people had God as their king. They said, give us a king like all the other nations. They are possessed because they chose to be possessed. And verse 5 says, whose possessors slay them and hold themselves not guilty. Verse 6 says, for I will no more pity the inhabitants of the land. But lo, I will deliver the men, every one, into his neighbor's hand and into the hand of his king. And they shall smite the land, and out of their hand will I not deliver them. God said, I'm not going to deliver. He said, deliver, deliver. I'm not going to deliver. Why? Because they have made bad choices that brought them to the brink of destruction. God says they are going to be slaughtered. Now, doesn't mean utterly, because he's going to keep a remnant, and that's what he's going to bring through the whole time. He's got your prisoners of promise. He said earlier, right? Verse 12, chapter 9. Prisoners of promise. Why? Because it's going to look ugly. Guys, when the lights go out, aren't you glad you got a promise? Pilgrim's Progress, Christian and his buddy are there in the dungeon of despair, and it was time and time until they almost lost all hope. And finally he says, fool that I am, and he pulls a key out. He was given in the beginning of his journey a key called promise. He says, I'm sure I can open every door in Doubting Castle. And that is you and me. We have to recognize those promises are now. It doesn't mean you're going to have everything good. It didn't mean they were going to get everything good right away. But when he had waked them up, he would then again restore them to a place where they'd be his battle axe and be victors. But for now, they've got to be slaughtered. Now, what he does in verse 7, it says, for I will feed the flock of slaughter, even you, O poor of the flock. What he's doing now is he's beginning to put on a little bit of a show for these guys. See, what Zechariah does when he turns the corner in verse 7 is he's actually taking a flock, and he's beginning to do what God said was going to happen to his people. He's taking a charge over some flock. There are people who've come to him. And in where he says, thus saith the Lord in verse 4, he's actually answering questions from inquirers. This is what people did in Israel. They'd come to prophets and they'd say, tell us something. And they really, some of them wanted to know and some of them didn't. Just like a church service, right? Some people want to know. Some people really don't want to know, but they're there. Well, he's going to deal with those two types of people. He says he took a flock and he began to feed them. And he says, I'm going to take a flock in verse 7, and I will feed the flock of slaughter, even you, O poor of the flock. See, he's going from the real flock to the people of God. He says, even you, O poor of the flock. And I took unto me two staves, and I called one beauty and I called one band, and I fed the flock. So these are real things going on. He's got two staffs in his hand. He's beginning to feed a flock in keeping with what God said was going to happen to Israel. In verse 8, he says, three shepherds also I literally dismissed. I dismissed them in 1 month. Three shepherds. And my soul loathed them, and their soul also abhorred me. He said, they didn't like me, and I didn't like them. But he had to let them go. Because these three shepherds represented three kingdoms yet to come. We're under Medes and Persians, you have the Greeks, and then you're going to have Rome, Romans. Okay, this is a picture. 1 month, there was a significance in all that he's saying. These are all pictures, wide brush God's drawing with. He says in verse 9, then I said, I will not feed you, that dieth, let it die. And that which is cut off, let it be cut off, and let the rest of every one of them eat the flesh of the other. He said, not only did I feed the flock for slaughter, but now I'm going to dismiss some shepherds because those guys are going to be ones who are going to be dealt with over the course of time. But now I'm just going to let them go. I'm just going to let them pine. And that's what Israel has been doing all these years. Pining, pining, pining. And in verse 10, he says, and I took the staff, even beauty, and I cut it in sunder that I might break my covenant which I had made with all the people. God is saying, through the prophet's behavior, he broke his covenant with them, apparently. And what he did was, he stopped all of their rituals that were being done prior to for a season. They wouldn't have rituals during the Maccabees and all that, and now we don't have them. There's a apparent breaking of the covenant, but he will, again, restore all that, as he said a moment ago. So he did it, and the Bible says that when he broke this thing, and he said, I might break my covenant, it says in verse 11, and it was broken in that day, so the poor of the flock, in verse 11, that waited upon me, knew that it was the word of the Lord. In other words, poor in spirit. The people in the room who really wanted to know were saying, what's going to happen? What do we look for? He took it. He took the flock. He did these things, went through these motions, and the poor got it. Guys, the secret of the Lord was with his people. God wants to reveal to you and me. He wants us to understand this stuff. But those who are poor in spirit are the ones who will receive it, not those who are in the wrong disposition. And then he told the rest of them, if you will, in verse 12, and I said unto them, the rest of the inquirers, if you think good, give me my price. What price? Price for my prophecy. You need to pay me. You know, as you take care of the house of God, it tells you what is happening in your own life, right? I mean, that's true. That's the way it was in Israel. It's the way it is today. Doesn't mean we have to have big golden chairs. It just means we give a worthy portion, set aside a little bit every week. We're saying, this is what I be, leave, and this is what I value. Where your treasure is, what? Your heart will be, right? He says, give me my price. You know, you guys need to support me out here. What did they give him? Well, they gave him the price, and they measured out for him 30 pieces of silver. It was a contemptuous price. He had just told them a word they didn't like. And so what did they do? They gave him the price of a gourd slave, somebody who would be a bondservant. And what did he do? This is all picture, right? They gave him the price of a slave. He did what they needed him to do, and he told them the truth. And what did they do? They gave him the price of a slave, common slave. And the Lord said unto me in verse 13, cast it into the potter, a goodly price that I was prized at by them. And I took the 30 pieces of silver, said it again, cast them into the potter's field in the house of the Lord. And he says, then I cut asunder my staff called bands that I might break the brotherhood between Judah and Ephraim, or Judah and Israel. There was always this desire to fix it. Remember Jehoshaphat, a man after God's own heart, wonder things. He did everything good, but except in that he leagued himself with Ahab, right? They kept wanting to put it back together. Do you know there's a time when God says, wipe it clean. Don't honor the brotherhood more than you honor me. And sometimes we think we got to be a good, nice Christian and get along with all of the Christians and give up our values and our doctrine and our truth in the name of what? Getting along. Because shouldn't Christians after all get along? He says, no, I'm going to break asunder this bond that they've had, which made Judah go a-whoring after Israel, her older sister. Verse 15 is where he says a second one. He says, and the Lord said unto me, take unto thee yet instruments of a foolish shepherd. The first one was, he said, the word of the Lord came, and the word was slaughter. The second word is sorrow. He says in this second word, verse 15, and the Lord said unto me, take unto thee yet instruments of a foolish shepherd. Again, he's playing out a picture. For lo, I will raise up a shepherd in the land, which shall not visit those that be cut off, neither shall seek the young, nor heal that which is broken, nor feed that which standeth still. He shall eat the flesh of the fat and tear their claws in pieces. What he's saying is this is Antichrist. He's going to send them a shepherd who's not going to care one whit about them. Why are Israel going to sign a treaty with this false Messiah? Because they think he's the Messiah. The 7-year tribulation is about getting a dumb shepherd who's not real. And he says, this guy is actually going to be all about devouring. It's going to be a time of sorrow. Time of what? Jacob's trouble. Verse 17, woe to the idle shepherd. Idle shepherd. Because he makes himself God, right? He sits in the Holy of Holies once they get that temple rebuilt. And the sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. His arm shall be clean dried up and his right eye shall be utterly darkened. And God ends his burden of the Lord, which came in verse 9, with a word against this prince that shall come. And he tells them, they're in for a time of sorrow. But he gave them promises at the gate. And he gave you and me promises. Told you at the outset. Getting older. Don't like getting older. Don't like feeling older. Don't like thinking about the graveyard or the cemetery sometimes, because I know people in there now. I was listening yesterday to Adrian Rogers. He is in a casket today. Where he is, I will one day be. I don't like that. But I have a promise. I have a promise. That to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. And if I don't have that promise in my core, what hope do I have at the graveside? He gave them a promise they're going to be victors. But it's going to get dark. It may get dark for you and me. We've inherited a whole lot of hurt down here. So let us just keep hold of our promises. So we will be prisoners of the promise too. If the bottom does indeed fall out. Because that's where God would have us be. Prisoners of the promise.